I'd like to introduce now our guest speaker that we've had for the past month in August, and it's Dennis's last week here with us, and he will be doing steps 10, 11, and 12. You, Dennis R. from Freehold.
Hi, everybody. My name is Dennis Robbins, and I'm an alcoholic. And really want to thank the group for having me, Mike and Kathy, and the entire group for having me the past month. It's just been a joyous thing for me. I've really had a lot of fun doing this. So. I get a chance to hear myself. And when I hear myself, I learn. I remember. And I know what I have to do on a daily basis. I want to thank James and Veronica for riding with me up here. I know I must have scared them half to death. I have a very big, tremendous shortcoming. I drive fast, and a lot of people are very scared when they ride with me. But I always tell them, you don't have to be afraid. I'm not wrecking my car. You know what I mean? You know. So thanks a lot for coming with me and being there with me all the time. And of course my good friend Tommy is coming up on his 12th year. I don't have to say much about Tommy. Tommy just does it. And that's what it's all about. You know, my sponsor used to always tell me it's not so much what a person says. The measure of a person is by what he does. What he does in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. Beth, your joy was infectious. Your joy was very infectious. And I just love listening to you because I carry that same joy today, and I have had it pretty much since I got here. My sponsor told me that I was home, that I wouldn't have to suffer anymore, and I haven't. He said, there are 12 steps. You put these 12 steps in your life, you will become a whole new person. He hasn't lied to me. You know, it's just, you know, I think about my sponsor. In fact, he's coming up here in October. He's out in Tucson, Arizona. But what he actually did was, he never really demanded that I do anything. He just showed me what he did. And I think I wanted to be so much like him that I just followed him. And I did exactly what he did. And I look back over it now over these past years, and I'm just so grateful that God put that man in my life, because he led me to this book. And what he did was he led me to service. And of course, that's in the 12th step. But I'm going to talk about the 10th step today. You know, and I generally like to review the steps, you know, when I come up here, you know. And, you know, the first step, we were powerless. And what I had to do is I had to find that power to help me out. I learned about my disease in the doctor's opinion. In the first three chapters of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was able to identify. And my sponsor used to always tell me, read this book or study this book and identify with what you read. And all they did was talk about me. I knew I was in the right place. And I came to believe that power greater than myself can restore me to sanity after being here a period of time, getting a whole new understanding about a God that I've never really ever known. I learned about him in We Agnostics. The God that I learned about in church just isn't a God that I believe in today. Just not that way, because for anything or any person or any deity, whatever you might say, to take me out of the living hell that I was in, had to love me. And that's the only way I can say it. Had to love me. Because I was in a living hell that I will never, don't ever want to ever go back to. And it's right here. I can pull at it anytime I so desire. And I hope God never lets me forget that hell that I was in. Because I don't want to go back there. That's the reason why I come to places like this. I'm around people like you. Drunks trying to stay sober day at a time. And that's why I'm here. And by making that decision to turn over my life over to the care of God, did that through really in action steps through four through seven. Now, I really love, I don't know if anybody knows about Joe and Charlie, but I love them when they talk about the first three steps being taking care of the spiritual, and steps 4, 5, 6, and 7 taking care of the mind, steps 8 and 9 taking care of the physical relationships. And then they talk about after that you might run into another dimension. You know, and to be honest with you, there's some days I feel like I'm in that dimension today. And there's some days when old Dennis gets back in there and I feel like I have 90 days, you know. But you know, I'm going to be honest with you. See, I'm honest about my program, you know. I'm very, very honest. I don't have no lock on anything. I do it a day at a time. That's all. It's the only way I can live this program. My sponsor also told me to take and incorporate these steps in your life. Some people say work the steps. I don't get into what people say and things. My sponsor says get these steps and incorporate them into your life. Let them become a part of you. And you'll be all new. And like I said, Sonny never lied to me. In steps 4, we look at ourselves. You know, I had to find out those parts of my nature that I needed to ascertain to give to a God of my understanding. I think that those are the three basic instincts of life: security, sex, and social. In the fourth step, I was able to write it down, make a list of all my resentments, fears, and my sexual behavior. I was able to take a look and see how selfish, self-centered, how self-absorbed I had been all my life, not just when I picked up a drink. All my life. I was able to look back and really categorize all my life story, and man, I was selfish right from the get-go. And in step 5, you know, we admitted to ourselves, to God, another human being, and that human being is my sponsor. Because he was so categorically shared his life with me, and I shared mine with him. And I was able to tell him those things about me. I never knew I was as self-seeking as I was. I never realized how self-absorbed I was. And those things that I would never tell anybody in life, I was able to share with my sponsor. It was something that he pointed out to me in the big book. He said, if you skip this vital step, you might not overcome your problem with drinking. And that got me motivated right away. I didn't want to go back to that hell that I came from. So when you show me something, and you convince me, I'm going. You know. And one of the things that I'm so grateful for today is when I got here, I was in so much pain that all I wanted to do was get better. And it was always, what's next? When am I on step 2? Let's say the prayer. When do I start to do this thing? That's the way it was for me. You know, it didn't take a long time for me to get involved in the steps, and it didn't take a long time for me to complete these steps. And in step 6, you know, we'd be entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. And in 7, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. And basically, it's those defects that really that caused me to pick up a drink right away that I want him to take away. But those little subtle defects, I still have them. No jealousy, envy, those still things still linger around in me. But it's a day at a time. I'm not as bad as I was when I got here. And that's how I measured it, progress, not perfection. No, and in 8, I made a list of all those persons that I had harmed in my sexual behavior, and in my resentments. And I got that off my 4-step list. And I was able to make direct amends to everybody. And in my life, I didn't have to go looking for anybody. Everybody just seemed to appear at the right time. God presented me the opportunity to make the amends just at when it was supposed to be made. I made amends with my ex-wife after I was in the program a little over 2 years. I made amends with those people on my job, those bosses who I made miserable. I was sober a little bit over 2 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. Some amends with my family were made almost immediately. After I got to the amends step, I went right to my parents and right to my wife and right to my child and carried out that function. And it told me right after that these things, these great promises would come true in my life. I like to tell you that some of those promises were coming too long before I got to step 9. A lot of them were coming true in my life before I got to step 9. You know, now we're at step 10, and it says we continue to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admit it. And to me, my sponsor tell me that this is a vigilant step. This is a step that I have to, it's a step which enables me to always take a look at me. And I used to hear people talk about taking a 10-step at night. Well, I have to take one all day long. I have to always be constantly looking at myself. I have to look at myself about selfishness, my self-centeredness, things that crop up my life. I have to be constantly aware of it. And I have to put my finger on it. If I can't, I have to write it down and take a look at it and promptly admit it when I'm wrong. Otherwise, it takes a very, very bad toll on me. I feel the pain almost immediately. If I want to sop in something, I know I did something wrong and I just want to stir around in the mud. I can do it, but man, the pain is not good. And sometimes when I want the pain to go away right away, it doesn't. Even when I do follow the directions and I, you know, admit it to myself, to my sponsor, or to another person in my network, and I ask God to remove it, sometimes He doesn't do it right away. He lets me sit in for a little while because I have the tools today in which to do that. I have the tools in which to do that today. And, you know, it's something I have to do all day long. I have to watch for those times when self kicks in, because with me it can come like that. You know what I mean? And at least today, my God, I have an awareness of it. You know, I have an awareness of it. That's the most beautiful thing about it. But I didn't have awareness of nothing when I was out there. I just existed. You know, I was so sick, I didn't even think there was anything wrong with me. I didn't realize anything wrong with me until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and started doing these steps. I thought I was fine. I just thought I drank too much. You know what I mean? I thought booze was killing me, but I mean, the fact of the matter was, I didn't think there was anything wrong with me, you know, mentally, that couldn't be erased by either shock treatments or a padded cell somewhere. And I mean, you know, just a time away and just give me a few jolts and I guess I would be all right. You know what I mean? But I found that I've been sick ever since I was a little boy. Ever since I was a little boy, I've been sick. Because I always wanted what I wanted when I wanted it. Always. I mean, if that's not self-centered behavior, nothing is. You know, and, you know, it says in our book, you know, it says that, you know, a lot of people just think promises on 83 and 84, but there are a lot of promises right here in step 10. A lot of promises right here. Love and tolerance through others is our code. Here's one of the greatest ones. We have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, on most days for me. You see, I'm honest. On most days. Before I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't cease fighting anybody. I fought everybody, every day, all day. My mind was constantly in chaos. I mean, I was just anxiety. It was just a constant burden of just to live. Lying. Before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I probably was in the early stages of being a pathological liar. That's one who not only believes a lie, but believes that you believed a lie. You know, so, you know, if nothing else, I've made tremendous progress up until this point, you know, because now I don't relish lies too much, and I don't like to lie, and I don't like people to lie to me. You know, so it says here that we will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we will recoil from it as from a hot flame. That's incredible. You know, it says here the sanity returns. Hey, isn't that something? You know, from being totally insane, exhibiting insane behavior just about all my life, to now having some reason of sanity, meaning that I can distinguish a lie in my mind when it tells me that the first drink is all right. It's a lie. I tell you how far the lie is with me. If a lie tells me I don't need to go to meeting today, my mind's lying. You know, because I remember what my sponsor told me when I first got here. He said, "How often did you drink?" I said, "Every day." He said, "When you go to meetings every day." And I haven't broken that trend in the last almost 18 years, a day at a time. You know, I just did what he said. He said, "Do that," and that's what I do. And I don't know, for some of you another, but I make a lot of meetings. I guess your emotional behavior gets better. Something. I don't know. I love coming to meetings. I love listening to people. I love listening to people. And, you know, it says we react sanely and normally. Wow. Wow, that's some promise, man. You know what I mean? You know, I mean, based on my life as I knew before I got here, my goodness gracious. You know? And we'll find that this has happened automatically. Nothing I did. All I did was follow some simple directions that were laid out to me in this book. I'm always going to say, and a great sponsor who always answered the questions for me, he would never let me blame anybody. Never let me blame anybody. He'd always say, the problem's in you, and until you find it, you're going to have to suffer some. That's the way my sponsor talked to me, and I love him for it. Because today I can't blame anybody. I'd like to, but I can't. You know, the part that really gets me is this part right here. It says, the problem has been removed. The problem has been removed. Gone. You know, I don't go to liquor stores no more. I don't go to no bars. I used to live in a bar. You could have mailed me letters in a bar that I was into. I believe I could have got mail there. That's how popular I was in some of the bars that I went to. You know, I don't like bars. I don't go around people that drink. If I happen to be at a function and people are drinking, it doesn't bother me. If I feel uncomfortable, I'll leave. But it doesn't bother me today. I know the truth about alcohol, finally. I know the truth about alcohol, that I can't drink it. It's just that simple. I know the truth about it. We're neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And, you know, spiritual condition. You know, I was out in Minnesota at the convention, and Tom I from North Carolina was talking. He's a tremendous man. I get a chance to see him every year because I go down to the North Carolina Corrections Convention. And he was speaking at the young people's meeting up in Minnesota. And I was wondering what that old man was speaking to the young people's for. But, you know, he had a real great message. He always does. But he says something that really stuck with me. He says, we can't rest on our laurels. And in the book it says, alcohol is a subtle foe. He says, I have to do today what I did yesterday. You know? And thank God for not only Tom I, but my sponsor was that way. And I get a chance to go to a prison every Tuesday night for the last 17 years. With a guy that's over 49 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he doesn't rest on his laurels either. I used to tell him, Bill, my God, man, you've been doing this for almost 45 years, prison work. When are you going to take a break? He says, oh, no, there ain't no breaks here. You know, and thank God that I've been around people like that. So I don't rationalize or trick my mind into believing that I can take a break from that. You know, and, you know, he went on to mention how people had gone out, you know, people with 25 and 30 years had gone back out and drank because they rested on their laurels. They thought they were okay. You see, I need to hear that. I need to hear that every day. I need to hear that on a continual basis. And I need to be around people who are constantly doing service so that I don't ever get the thought that I don't need to do this no more. I don't ever get the thought that I can let them do it now. I can sit back and watch. No, I think, you know, for me, being in fit spiritual condition means, to me, is giving of myself to another suffering alcoholic. That's what it is. You know, I've never seen God. You know, I've maybe have experienced some sort of feeling on occasion, but I think the best thing I can ever see in God is look in another alcoholic's eyes. You know, we watch the dead part of the eyes turn into sparkles. And you see the program working in people. You know, being around and seeing people that came in the program like Tommy almost 12 years ago. And then looking at him today, and my God, I know this works. No question in my mind about it. Maybe I won't see it in me, but I'll see it in somebody else. You know, so staying in fit spiritual condition is, man, what it says, we just have a daily reprieve based on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. That's the only place where they use that word maintenance. You know, people used to say, these are maintenance steps. These are not maintenance steps for me. These are steps where I need to just continue to grow. I need to continue to grow. And it says, every day for the rest of my life. Every day. I never have it made here. You know, there are times when I might think I'm all right. You know, I get those feelings, you know, sometimes, you know, I'm all right. But that lie's a lie. That's a lie. You know I still have to do what I have to do on a daily basis to keep what I have. And, you know, it's every day when we must carry this vision of God's will into our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. Shit, my will never worked. Never. It got me here. Right now, Alcoholics Anonymous got me in a lot of trouble, too. A lot of trouble. A lot of trouble. My will. You know, so I need to turn my will and my life over to the God as I've come to understand in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm much better for it. Much better for it. Much has already been said about receiving strength and inspiration and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed His directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God conscious. Wow. Boy, that's deep. You know, when I'm not always thinking about me, but the occasions when, a lot of occasions when I start thinking about somebody else. That's not me. There has to be something else doing it for me, because all my life I was self-absorbed with me. What for me? Why not mine? If I gave you something, I was always looking for something in return. You know, I always had this thing where I had to know the barmaid. Go with the barmaid if necessarily. Know the owner. Because I had to get my drinks when I ran out of money. So I schemed, manipulated anything to get what I want. I would go in a bar sometime acting like I was running for mayor. Give everybody a drink. But damn, if I had no money, boy, you better be spending. You see, otherwise I'd get angry. See, so my intentions were not always, you know, for the other. It was always to look for something what I can get. But today I don't do that. Today I don't do that. You know, not most of the time. See, I'm going to keep it real. You know, I'm not no saint up here. And I hope I never become one, because I don't ever want to leave here. You know, and it says when we get to step 11... we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Praying on for the knowledge of the will for us and the power to carry that out. I've learned to pray in Alcoholics Anonymous. Be honest with you, when I was drinking, all my prayers were, help me, God. Get me out of this mess, God, and I promise it won't happen again. There were times when I'd be laying in my bed, and today it's called alcoholic paralysis, where only thing I could move was my eyeballs. I'd be laying in bed, and the only thing I could move was my eyeballs, and it frightened me. Then after a period of time, the feeling would come back in my body, and I'd get up, and I'd fall on my knees right away, oh God, thank you so much, and I'd go get a drink. I'd go right and get a drink. You know, always in trouble, on my knees, puking my guts out in a dirty bathroom, bar bathroom floors, you know, pissing crap all over them. You know, that's it. I ain't doing it no more. And as soon as I get up off my knees, I walk outside and tell a bartender, give me a beer. See, a whole lot of my drink, I thought beer and wine was just beverages. I didn't know that was alcohol. You know, alcohol to me was getting drunk. You know, heavy duty stuff. You know what I mean? I'm talking about overproof vodka, overproof rum, just getting on down and getting the job done. So my prayers mainly consisted of when I was drinking was, get me out of this and I promise I won't do it again. But self was absorbed not only in me, but self was absorbed even in the prayer as I see it today. I was only praying just for that instant right there. I thought I was praying to get out of it permanently, but I wasn't. Just get me out of this right now, because I really want to drink. You know, that's what I really want to do. And, you know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, it says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, which means to me that by this time, I should have had some kind of conscious contact with God. Some. You know, some sort of awareness that I'm not running the show no more. Somewhere along in the previous page, something should have hit where something other than me is doing something that I'm not sure of. And I found that out. That there were times when I said, oh, this is not me. You know, and I had to improve on that. Now, how do I improve on that? By following some simple directions that are laid out here in step 11. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I was out in Utah. I was out in northern Arizona. I got asked to come out there and speak at a roundup. And I wanted to go up to, Bryce Canyon, which is only about maybe 50 miles, about 60 miles from where we were. And my sponsor was in the back seat with this guy's wife. He was a past delegate, Bob. And when we were driving up there, out of the clear blue sky, he said, upon awakening, I asked God to direct my thinking, especially be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. And I looked at him, and I said, and that's in the big book. He says, yeah, and I say it every morning. I said, well, I'll be damned. You know, I said, I've been sober. You know, at that time, I guess it was about 17 years. And I said, you know, I never said it. It's right here, simple directions. I never asked, who better can direct my thinking than God? Not me. I need to turn it over to somebody. You know, so since we went through that, and since I've been back home, I practice that on a daily basis. That means when my first conscious thought of being awake, right away I ask God to direct my thinking. You know, and I really feel if I practice this, if I continue to do it, if I'm conscious of the fact that I'm asking to do it, then it will be done for me. And eventually those crazy thoughts, them insane thoughts, or wherever they are when you first wake up, will slowly drift away. You know, and then this thing is just full of prayer. You know, it talked about those things about looking at myself during the day, examining myself at night. With me, I examine myself throughout the day. If I'm uncomfortable, I'm talking to somebody right away. That's just the way it is. I can't sit with pain too long. So I'm talking with somebody right away. And I like this other prayer. You know, it talks about, in thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may have been able to determine which course to be taken. Here we ask God for inspiration, intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We're often surprised how right answers come right after we tried it for a while. Amazing. Amazing. I wish I could practice that every day. Because sometimes when I get angry, I don't relax. I don't think about that intuitive thought, and right away I cause damage. Then I have to go back and make amends for the damage I caused. You know, simple instructions. And I believe if we practice these every day, I guess they become part of us. And I don't have to worry about those all of a sudden periodic anger moments or things not going my way and I react to them. And we usually conclude this period of meditation with a prayer that we can be shown all throughout the day what our next step will be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask special freedom from self-will. We may ask for ourselves or if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us waste a lot of time doing that. It doesn't work. And you can easily see why. The truth. Self-will can't remove self-will. I have to make my will conform with God's will if I can to the best of my ability. Otherwise, I'm sunk back with Dennis again. And Dennis is a problem. You know, meditation, I guess prayer is petitioning God and meditation is listening. And I'm not too good at sitting still and just listening. I tend to go to sleep. You know, so that Far Eastern meditation thing just doesn't work too well with me. But, you know, I heard Joe and Charlie say something that really identified with, and I need to do more. Is meditating for me can mean listening to you. You know, listening to you. Not listening to what I want to say in response to you, but listening to you fully. You know, just trying to block out everything in my mind, but concentrating on what you say. And, you know, I'm practicing that more and more every day. You know, I remember when I was in meetings and everyone said, Brady, I couldn't wait for the person to shut up so I can tell him he was wrong. You know, or you didn't read this page in the big book, or you should do this and you should do that, and that's self-righteous behavior. But basically, meditation for me is listening to you. Listening to people in the rooms. There's a message from everybody. I don't care if you're here a day, 2 days, 90 days, or a year, 10 years, 20 years. There's a message from everybody. And if I can learn to just listen without thinking about what I'm going to say in response. And that's kind of difficult for a self-centered person. Because right away, I can anticipate what you're going to say to me already. So I already got a response ready for you immediately. And I need to work at that. I need to sit and listen to you all the way through. I used to have guys I sponsored tell me, man, wait a minute. Why don't you just wait till I finish? And I'd say, I already know what you're going to say. And I'm playing God. I don't know what they're going to say. You know, I want to kind of get to the chase. But sometimes I have to let somebody talk their way out of something. You know, and then listen. And then respond. But not to just stand there and say, okay, you don't... Interrupting right away. I used to do that with Tommy all the time. I used to do it with Tommy, you know, and it's not right, you know. So meditation for me is sitting still when I get occasion to sit still. I also have this thing. I remember a woman in New York when I was running a meeting up there, she used to tell me, she said, you know, if you're constantly going, there's something wrong. I used to say, what do you mean by that? She said, why can't you just sit down and be with yourself? I said, wow, you know, I'm going to try that. You know, because my whole thing is, I want to go wax my car. I'm a big car waxing freak. I can wax my car 3 times a day. You know, it's an addiction with me. I'd be truthful with you. But going to a store, she said, why don't you just sit and be with you? That's a good suggestion. I'm going to try that. And you know, there are times when I can just sit at home on my couch, my family's gone, and you know, I feel comfortable. And I said to myself, why didn't I do this before? I didn't know how. I was listening to this. You know, where a lot of times it's good just to sit down and just don't do nothing. You know, now I got to watch that too, because I could go the other way. I'm an alcoholic. See, I could get in that don't do nothing and get stuck on that couch and not move. But I need to be alone with me sometime. I need to be alone with God. I need to be with me and not to deprive myself. And as we go through the day, we pause. When agitated or doubtful, we ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, thy will be done. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, or self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. Here's the part I like. It works. It really does. I mean, the first people who framed this book, the first 100, and Bill Wilson, when he worked, they lived this. They said there are explicit instructions here. If you follow these instructions, it works. It really does. You know, so I try now on a daily basis to follow the prayer structure, especially upon awakening. I ask God to direct my thinking. When I'm agitated, I try to take a step back and take a look at the situation and see where I've gone astray in it. I do that on a daily basis. That's why I love this program. It's one day at a time. There's some days I'm great at it, and there's some days when I'm not too good at it. But as long as I don't pick up that drink, I can always improve. And this is progress, not perfection. And this is progress every day for the rest of my life until they put the casket over me. So I'm never, ever going to get it right. And I love the way Bill and Dr. Bob, and the framers framed this. We're never going to get it perfect. I used to think I was, though. I used to think, boy, I could get this thing down pat. And all of that stuff is gone. I'm in bliss. I remember I was at the prison one day, and Bill McDuffie, may he rest in peace, he told me, he says, you must be insane. He says, I'm sober almost 30 years. And he says, I go through stuff every day. I said, thank you for telling me that. Thank you very much for letting me know that there may be some days when we do struggle with self that I never have it made, you know. And then we get to step 12. After having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. I guess this is the only chapter where I can really close the book on, because I can really talk about my experience with it. I was sober about 4 months in Alcoholics Anonymous, and my sponsor started carrying me around to institutions with him. Detoxes, sobering up stations, and jails. Now, at 4 months, I wasn't really capable of carrying any kind of message. But what I did was I sat with him, and I watched what he did. And he says, when you're finished with all the steps, he says, maybe you can start doing this kind of work. At 8 months, he invited me out to Rikers Island. And he said, what I want you to do is I want you to dress up. And I said, what, dress up to go to a jail? He said, that's what I said. It was on a Sunday morning. Now, I don't know if anybody has any prison record or any jail record. I'm not going to take your inventory. But Rikers Island is an island with the largest jail population probably in the United States. It's probably the largest jail complex in the United States. Not prison, but jail complex. And before you go over the bridge onto the island, there's a security booth where they check your ID, they look at you, and they make sure you're all right to check the paperwork. Then once you go over the bridge onto the island, there's a reception center. And at that reception center, they check your ID, they check your paperwork, and then you go and you wait on a bus to take you out to the facility. So when we got out to the facility, which was the men's house of detention, we got there, they check your paperwork, they check your ID and everything again. I said, damn, Sonny, you do this every Sunday? And he said, yeah. And he kind of had a smile on his face, like, you're going to be doing it too. You know. But at the time, I was unsuspecting, you know, because that's the kind of sponsor he was, you know. And he said, you're going to be speaking at a meeting. And before we went into the meeting, he asked one of the correction officers if we can go into the tear part. And I looked, and there were tears, and there were people in tears. When I say tears, it means there were floors, it looked like cages. And when we got to the meeting, there was one alcoholic, one inmate, a correction officer, and my sponsor. And was the best meeting I ever had in my life. Because when I left that institution, it was a sunny day. I got outside that institution. And I asked God, I said, if you allow me to breathe a day at a time, I'll do this kind of work. I'll be committed to this every day for the rest of my life. And I haven't failed in that commitment to this day. And I'll tell you why I say that. It's because the awareness hit me that I should be in there. That's only by God's grace that I'm not in that jail or in prisons like it. And we left there, and we were doing the Edgecombe Men Facility, which is a work release for people coming out of Dannemora, Sing Sing, Green Haven, Attica. It was a work release program. He did that on Thursdays. And after about a year, or pretty close to a year, my sponsor said to me, he says, well, I have another commitment that night, but I would like you to take it for me. Well, that became my commitment. So if your sponsor takes you somewhere and kind of drops you off, that means you got it. It's just that simple. You know, and you know, when it talks it, when it mainly in the 12th in this book in the interaction in work with others, it talks about mainly 12-step work. And I had a 12-step experience. I had sponsored a guy who was coming up on, I guess about 6 or 7 days shy of a year. And his wife called me about 1:30 in the morning and said, "Greg is run around in the yard. He's going crazy." I got in my car, went over there, and picked him up. I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "I've been using." And I got angry because he was coming up short of a year. And I said, "Okay, well, I'm going to take you to a detox." I took him to Queens General Hospital in Queens. They wouldn't take him. I took him to Elmhurst. They didn't have any room. I said, "I know where they will take you. They'll take you at Bellevue. They take everybody at Bellevue. And if they don't take you at Bellevue, they'll take you up at the Sobering Up Station on Lafayette and Houston Street. There's a Sobering Up Station there. We'll get you there." Well, as we're driving across the Brooklyn Bridge, we're in Lower Manhattan. We're driving up past the village. He says, "Stop the car." So I said, "Why?" He said, "My girlfriend lives down here." Now, mind you, his wife called me to tell me what he was doing, but he wanted to go see his girlfriend. I said, "No, you're going to a detox. I'm going to take you to a detox. And then once you're there, then you can do whatever you want to do." And he started to almost arm wrestle me. And then I told him, I said, "Get out the car and do what you have to do. Because it tells me in this book, if they don't want it, don't waste my time with them." You know, and then when I got home, it's about 3 o'clock. I had to go to work the next day. I wasn't even tired. But I was angry. So I called my sponsor. And I said, "You know, this knucklehead was about 5-6 days short of a year. And he went out and drank and got drunk." And my sponsor said, "Did you drink?" I said, "No." He said, "Well then, you did a great job. You didn't drink, did you?" You see, what I have to remember and what's been very paramount is, I don't get nobody sober. I only have a message to carry. And that message is, if you follow the instructions in this book, you'll find a power greater in you sufficient to keep you sober for that day. And your life will change, because I can tell you, because mine has changed. But I can't get nobody sober. I can only take you. I can tell you what I did, and that's all. But that was my ego. That was my ego. And my sponsor straightened it out real quick, like, "You're not here to get nobody sober. That's God's work. You're just here to carry the message. And if they fail, that's not your fault, as long as you don't fail." And that helped me out a lot. And that's been my 12-step experience. My other experience as far as service work was concerned was just being incredibly active. I was very, very fortunate because I didn't have a wife that complained. After my wife came back in my life, she did not complain about my activity in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I would tell her I'm going to a prison with Sonny to speak, or I'm going with him somewhere, or we're doing this, she would just say, "Go. Go. Have fun." Because, you know, the mortgage was getting paid, the lights weren't getting turned out, food was now on the table. You know, so whatever you got to do with AA, man, you just go, man. You know, "I'll see you when you come back." And the good thing about that is, drinking, I didn't come back. I would stay gone until everything ran out. Then I come back like a dog with his tail between his legs. "Oh, I'm sorry." I did that for many, many years, you know. But now I'm beginning to live it. I'm beginning to live it. About, like I say, 17, I guess I was sober about a year and 2 months. My sponsor brought me down to Avenel. And Avenel is the maximum security prison for sex offenders. And he said, "I'm going down there." I go down there every Tuesday once a month. "I want you to go down there and speak." And when I got down there, it was the AA group. They had shades on that. You've been there, haven't you? Yeah, they had shades on both sides. You know, the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. They had a secretary. They had a coffee maker. It was a functional group, and that group just celebrated its 28th anniversary. And when I got down there, I told my story. And one of the correction officers in there had said something. He said, well, did you ever do so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so? I said, yeah. He said, well, then you qualify to be in here. I said, oh, my God, I didn't know that. And, you know, if I really talk about my drinking behavior, I got to get honest. I wasn't real nice when I drank. Especially when I combinated the drinking with the drugs, I was violent. And my treatment of women was not really too nice at times. And if they had done what they were supposed to do, maybe I could have been arrested for sexual assault. I have to be very honest about it. I qualify to be in there. But it's through the grace of God that I'm not. But what he did was, he said, how would you... I asked Bill McDuffie and I asked Bill Duncan, I said, can I become a volunteer? And he said, yes. And I've been there ever since, a day at a time. You know, now, not only was I doing that, I got involved when I moved down to Jersey with Monmouth County Jail. I got involved at the general services level at World Services, at the intergroup level, at the area level, and at the district level. And today I'm just a work in the vineyard. That's all I am, just a work in the vineyard. I believe that's all my God wants me to do. He just wants me to carry the message of love and hope in institutions. I'd like to tell you a little bit about commitment. Now, I'm going to tell you about this God that I've, that I've come to love, who people he's put in my life. My sponsor's mother died about 9 years ago. Well, maybe more like 10 years ago now. And we were at the wake, and the wake was on a Tuesday. And his brothers were there, and it was early in the afternoon. It was about 4:30. And about 5 o'clock, he said, let's go. I said, let's go where? He said, "Mama, I can't help my mother anymore. But I can go help the suffering alcoholic." And we went down to Avenel that night. And to this day, that touches me, because that's commitment. He said, maybe I can help a suffering drunk. I can't help my mother now. My brothers are here. They'll watch you. They'll greet the people as they come in. But I got to go down to the prison. That's why I thank my God every day, because he put people in my life who show me what this is about. At Avenel, you know him, Bill Duncan. I'll say his last name because he's a serviceman. Bill Duncan, he's sober 49 years. He suffers from a variety of physical ailments. He's legally blind. I don't know how many operations he's had for cancer and Parkinson's and everything else, but every Tuesday he's there. Every Tuesday. You know what I told him one day? I said, you know, you've wiped out every reason I could ever have for not doing this stuff. You've just wiped it out. You just blew it. Just blew me. I have no excuse. You just wiped out every excuse I can have for not going. Just totally wiped it out. And he goes with me on the first and fifth Fridays of the month at Monmouth County Jail. I'm going away tomorrow, so James is going to take it over with me tomorrow, and we have to wheel him in. And when he gets there, when he starts talking, he gets so quiet and you get a pin drop. That's how powerful the message is. Because that's what he's been doing all his life. See, God has put people like this in my life. I mean, I can't trick myself into believing that I don't need to do this kind of work anymore. There's two things I don't do. I don't talk down to no alcoholic. He tells me that and work with others. I don't criticize him. You know, I had a confrontation with a guy that I sponsored today, and I told him, I said, wait a minute, man, you suffer from conflict. You know, you're very, I can't even think of the word, but yeah, confrontational. I said, I didn't tell you what to do. I told you what I did. You know, that's the way I talk to him. I don't tell you what to do. I'll tell you what I did. And I share my experience, my strength, and my hope with you, hoping that maybe it will help you, but I'm not going to tell you what to do. You know, I don't sponsor anybody by spending money on them. I don't do that. I'm very, very probably with Tommy Tang probably the easiest sponsor anybody could ever have. I don't chase you down. I don't check attendance to make sure you're at meetings. I don't do that. Because my sponsor didn't do it to me. And I believe we become what we were brought up in AA as. I believe I become sort of like what my sponsor was. You know, I'm not a hammer. Although there are people who are hammer type sponsors in AA, and I think they're great because some people need that. Some people need a 2x4 upside the head. I'm just not the one to do it. I just don't believe in it. You know, I'm not. I try today not to be self-righteous. I try my best not to criticize anybody on their program. I'll just basically tell you what mine's about. You know, I smile an awful lot, and people used to think I was crazy. Well, I got news for them. I'm not crazy. Most times, I'm very happy. I'm very, very happy, especially now that I'm retired. So, if I can give any of you hope. Just work diligently, work hard, stay in this program. Then when you reach 58 years old or whatever age you want to, 55, like Tommy is going to stay, he can retire when he's 45. See, I wish I was like him, but I'm 58 years old now, so my time came when it was supposed to come. And I look back on it now, and the very same job that was about to fire me and not pay me a pension, I owe it all to Alcoholics Anonymous. Nothing I did. Absolutely nothing. I just did the footwork. That's all I did. And the outcome was always in God's hands. And I'm able to look back now and see that when my sponsor said to me when he first met me, "You have it made," I'm able to see today he was absolutely right. I have it made. Think about it. You know, all I have to do, I heard the lady said, all I have to do is look at my feet. All I have to do is just remember where I am, remember where I was. I've never had it this good in my entire lifetime. And service has been my saving grace. When times when I need to get out of myself, for some reason or another, it works. Now, I would get back into myself when I left the institution. If it was something that was really troubling me, it was really on top of me, and I couldn't get out of it, It would be relieved while I was in the institution. When I get out, it would come back. But then all of a sudden, one day, it's gone. And I know I had nothing to do with it. Because if I had anything to do with it, it had been gone a long time ago. You know, so I just stay here day at a time. And, you know, again, I want to thank you, Mike, and thank you, Kathy, and thank the group for having me. It's been a great 4 weeks for me, and I just love coming up here. And you know, unfortunately, this couldn't have been a question and answer period because I'd like to hear from you. You know what I mean? I get helped by listening to others. You know, I identify, and I believe it. And through identification is the healing. And you know, when it says when she was reading that part in about only an alcoholic can help an alcoholic, oh, that's the truth. I don't care what these rehabs and all these, they all got to come to AA. They got to come to AA. You know, we know because we've lived it. You know, our guy can have all the book knowledge in the world that he wants. He can have all the book knowledge in the world, but I've lived it. You know, I know what you're talking about. You know, if you're self-centered and self-absorbed like me and you're just sometimes, I know you. Because that's me, you know. You know, the grace of God to put us all together. Put us all together and so we can help each other, you know, stay away from the first drink one day at a time. And I just love Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't say any more than that. Just love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hope God continues to use me as an instrument of His peace and love. Just carry the message to the still suffering alcoholic, especially in institutions. I don't know, for some reason or another, I love institutions. I made a commitment. And I got to hold to it. God bless you.
Thank you, Dennis. I'd like to bring Ron up to, and Dennis, would you mind coming back up here? We have a little something for you.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Ron. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ron.
On behalf of the Caritas Message Group, I'd like to thank you for coming up here and sharing your message. Very powerful. I always look forward to hearing you share. Just when I used to go to Freehold, and just you touched me from my early sobriety. And I'd like to give you this card and a gift. And once again, really.
Well, these
very
pens,
much. Thank you very much.
My boy's in good school shape, baby.
Thank you.
Thanks, baby.